welcome to episode 36 of season 1, Reading with Grace, where we will continue reading The Unwanted's Island of Fire. Today we will be picking up from chapter 59, but first a quick recap of chapters 56 through 58. Sam, Heed, and Lonnie were successfully saved from Warbler Island by Alex and his crew. Although they were stopped by Queen Agala at one time, they still managed to escape. Lonnie got a nasty cut on one of her legs, and Alex was knocked out cold during the rescue, but both are making a recovery. Florence and Simber debate about when to tell Lonnie and Sam Heed about all the things that went on in Artemis while they were gone, including about Mr. Today and Lonnie's mother. Sam Heed sort of exploded with questions and emotion to Megan, asking where they were all this time and why they didn't come to save them. Alex woke up and we ended with the two boys hugging as they enjoyed their reunion. That's the end of the summary. Enjoy the episode! The Tale is Told. Sam Heed lowered his head and shuffled over toward Alex. "I'm an idiot," he said, kneeling down in front of Alex's chair. He reached out and the two friends hugged, Alex wincing only slightly when Sam Heed patted him on the back. "I'm glad you're okay." Sam sat down and looked at his friend. "You look terrible, though," he remarked. Alex gave him a shaky half-grin. "At least I don't smell like you." "Hey," Sam Heed said. The others nearby snickered. "I worked hard all day to smell this manly." He let a smile fade, then said earnestly, "I'm sorry for sounding like a jerk."
"Well, under the, circumstances," Alex said.
He turned green.
"Oh, no. Hold on a second."
He looked for Sky, who saw his face and rushed over, helping him to the railing just in time.
"It's the medicine," Henry said, nodding importantly. "He might yodel groceries all night long."
Alex groaned from the railing, letting his arms dangle over it.
"Somebody kill me now."
"No!"
shouted Florence, Octavia, Simber, Rufus, and all the humans who had lived through the disaster on Artemis. Death of a mage was no joking matter. Their faces reflected of the fear that it could happen again. Lonnie shot Sam Heed a quizzical look.
"I think maybe we should let them do the talking now."
The light moment of banter faded. Karina got up and offered her seat to Sam Heed so he could sit next to Lonnie. Sky helped Alex ease back into the spot on the other side of her. He wiped the sweat from his brow with his shirt and let his hand rest on the back of the chair. He closed his eyes.
"I drove the boat with Meg," he said, his voice wrecked and full of grit.
"Simber flew above us and slightly to the right," he said, his hand stretching out before him, placing Simber in his mind. "He was guiding us home in the dark. We made plans to come back for you the next day. And then Simber..." He heaved an uneasy breath and brought his forehead to cover his eyes as the memories flooded back. Alex began to shake uncontrollably. Lonnie looked at Henry in alarm.
"Is that the medicine too?"
"No," Henry said softly. At that moment, his face wore the experience of an old man. "He's crying."
"Why?"
Lonnie reached a hand out and slipped it in Alex's. Her face filled with concern. Sam Heed watched, surprised. He'd never seen his friend like this. Sky put her hand to her mouth and looked away, crying too, and Crow slipped his hand in hers.
"Seen," Simber said. The cat growled, watching Alex relive it all again.
Florence wiped a tear and flicked it overboard, and Octavia blew her nose loudly into her handkerchief. Sam Heed looked around at everyone and his heart slammed in his chest.
"What happened?" he whispered.
She took a deep breath and let it out slowly, and then he began. "In one instant, everything changed. Simber froze and fell into the sea. Claire's boat that Alex was driving at full speed stopped running, throwing him and Megan, who was unconscious, into the water. On land, the mansion disappeared in a poof, turning into the gray shack, and Artemis was gone, completely wiped out except for the people. And then a group from Quill attacked." Lonnie's mouth hung open.
"You're not serious," she breathed. "How could this have happened?"
She looked around, bewildered and scared.
"Seen?"
she prompted. She stared at Henry, but he only looked at the deck. Sammy's eyes were wild. He stood up and looked all around as if he might have missed someone. He looked at Alex, shaking in his chair, arms still flung over his face, and he grew pale.
"Rufus called Alex?"
"No."
"No way,"
he mumbled, thinking, and then he gasped and went up to scene, gripping his shirt, eyes begging the older boy to lie as he whispered,
"Where's Mr. Today?"
One Last Tale. When it was over, the ship was wet with tears. Alex had finally had a chance to grieve without having to be the brave one, while Sam Heed and Lonnie sat in shock.
At Lonnie's feet, Henry fidgeted, his face wearing the strain of one final secret. They sat like surviving comrades of a lost war, silent, finding comfort in existence of the others. One by one, the Artemans realized what hadn't been told, and they slipped away to the lower deck. Even Simber tried to give them some time alone by creating a job for himself. With his teeth, he grabbed a rope that was tied to the bow and began pulling, flying out ahead, helping the ship home. Skye hesitated and then went below decks, knowing Sam Heat could help Alex if he needed it. Even though she spent a lot of time with Henry, Skye was a stranger to Lonnie, and she hadn't earned the right to be in this conversation. Megan stole away, finding Sean and Karina standing quietly at the stern. Soon, only Alex, Lonnie, Sam Heat, and Henry remained. Alex forced himself to be strong. He gave Henry a long look. Henry returned it with sorrowful eyes and nodded. He scooted over to Alex and rested his chin on Alex's knee, wrapping his arms around Alex's lower leg like it was a security blanket. Alex rested his hand on the boy's head, mussing his hair a little in the comforting way. "We have one more thing we have to tell you, Lonnie," Alex said. He breathed shallowly, lungs searing with every breath. His whole skeleton was in pain, but he turned down a second dose of the medicine, because throwing up endlessly was worse. Lonnie looked up at him, her face going blank with fear. "What is it?" Alex leaned forward slowly, pinching the bridge of his nose, thinking. He edged his body up and out of the chair, trying not to gasp in pain. Henry reaching out to help him kneel on the deck next to Lonnie. "Al?" Sammy said, scrambling to help, but Alex waved him off. "It's cool. I'm fine," he lied. He rested his elbow on Lonnie's good leg and took her hand, and then he returned his head to look at Henry, giving him a sad smile and reaching out to bring the boy closer. Lonnie couldn't speak. Alex looked deep into her new orange eyes, feeling the most tremendous sorrow, knowing the next few minutes would change her life drastically, and hating to have to be the one to bear the news. Finally, he could delay it no longer. "When Quill attacked us after Artemy disappeared," he said, "the Unwanteds fought hard. They gave everything they had, but they lost their magic and were unprepared to fight Quill's way. We had no weapons," he explained. "Because of that, we lost some of Artemy's bravest, who fought to the death for the sake of us all." Lonnie's lip quivered, and her already red-rimmed eyes filled again. "No," she said, a tear escaped, and she looked at Henry. "No," she pleaded. Henry's face broke. Alex put his hand on the boy's shoulder. Lonnie turned back to Alex. "No!" she screamed. Alex's head tipped back and his lids closed halfway, and then he pressed her hand to his heart.
"I'm sorry to tell you that your mother..."
"No!"
Alex breathed. Lonnie's screams hurt more than his bones. "Your mother," he said, pausing, waiting for her, but she was already quiet, "was one of those brave people, and she died."
Lonnie stared at Alex, lips flared, face twisted and streaming with tears. Her body shuddered, and then her features softened as she looked at Henry. She reached out a quivering hand to touch his face, wiping a tear from his jaw and catching another that pooled in the shadow below his eye. And then she pulled her fingers free from Alex, buried her face in her hands, and rocked back and forth. Alex looked over at Sam Heed, who knelt on the deck on the other side of the chair. His wild eyes were locked on Lonnie, and he clenched his fists. Finally, he reached out his hand and brushed it tenderly over Lonnie's bowed head. Alex checked on Henry, who was crying in silence, and put an arm around the boy. Henry stiffened, then shrugged it off, shaking his head, and Alex nodded.
"Sorry," he whispered to the boy.
When Lonnie finally lifted her head, Alex was there. But she turned to Sam Heed, raising her arms like a child. He leaped to his feet and lifted her up to him, careful not to hurt her injured leg. She wrapped her arms around his neck and sobbed into his shoulder. Sam Heed held her close, eyes closed, saying things that only she could hear.
"Take me home," she sobbed. "Take me home."
Sam Heed whispered to her, holding her tightly. Slowly he moved away from the others, giving her privacy to grieve. Alex watched them for a long moment as the world wavered around him in a haze of pain. Then he dropped his gaze, resting his head in his hand. Beyond the pain, he felt almost like he'd lost something or been defeated. But that wasn't the right word or the right feeling to have at the time like this. There was something in one impulse, Lonnie turning to Sam Heed for comfort instead of him. That said more than anything else could have. That never would have happened before. Those two had always clashed, but there was something there now. Something strong. And even though Alex's feelings for Lonnie had changed, he couldn't help but curl inward a bit to protect the new emptiness he felt inside. When he looked up again, he saw that Henry had silently followed his sister, certainly wanting to be near her. She pulled him in, needing him as much as he needed her. After a minute, Alex took a few shallow breaths and leaned forward to use his hands, pushing his aching body to his feet. Hunched over, he took another surging breath and straightened, his legs shaking. He reached for the back of the chair to steady himself, missing it on the first try, but catching it with his fingertips on the second. He kept his head down, concentrating as a wave of black crossed in front of his eyes. He held himself there, willing his eyes to clear, and then he broke out into a cold sweat. His stomach twisted, and he staggered to the railing once more. Simba looked over his shoulder at his boy. His eyes flashed, and he growled low and long, a mourning song in his throat.
Sixty-one. A sleepless night for the high priest. Aaron paced the stony, lifeless halls of the palace. He tried to sleep, but tossed and turned, even on the comfortable palace bed. He had a lot to worry about. Artemis was back, or so he assumed, based on Haluki's escape, and Alex's subsequent rescue at the woman from the Haluki house, though that weird glass tube which had reappeared in the closet. Aaron had fired Bethesda and Liam on the spot, sending them to the ancient sector. But he was surprised that he didn't get much joy from that. His father had ruined it for him, he supposed. Aaron snarled when he thought about his parents. At least he'd have their loyalty. That was something, he supposed, when he seemed to be losing restorers faster than he was gaining slaves. Wanteds, that is. His mind turned to Gondolier Rattrap, and he willingly admitted that she was his biggest worry right now, for the sheer reason that he did not know what she was up to, and she wouldn't talk to him. Add to that the strange thing Secretary had seen her doing through the window, and it was all a bit frightening. He didn't need another magical world to fight against. One was enough, that was for sure. Aaron pulled up the giant door to the driveway, startling the two sleeping guards posted there. "At least pretend like you're protecting me," Aaron said. He waved them off and strode to his new doorway to the sea. There was no breeze tonight, which was rather unsettling now that he had gotten used to it. He stared out over the water as the moon went behind a stray cloud, leaving the night as dark as it had ever been, excluding the lights of the palace behind him, of course. Just as he turned to go back inside, something caught his eye. It was a light moving across the water not far offshore. His eyes widened and he hastened back to behind the wall, peering out. "What in Quill?" he whispered. As he stared, he began to make out the outline made up of dots and light, and he could hear people talking, though the sounds were too muffled to understand what they were saying. It was a palace on water, with strange flags pointing to the sky. It was nothing like the white boat that had belonged to the old mage. This thing was enormous. He stared at it past, wondering what sort of jalopy oil and tires that reached the bottom of the sea to make it move. He had never seen anything like it. As it passed out of his vision, he crept out through the doorway once more, to watch it, fascinated. "Where did it come from?" he wondered. "And where is it going?" And then his heart was stricken with fear. Could it be an enemy? One of the enemies Justina warned about? He clutched the packet of his shirt. How could he have doubted her? There must be other lands, for that vessel obviously didn't come from Quill, and he never seen it or heard about it in Artemis. He ran out further down the hill toward the water, watching it start and turn toward the island. Blood pounded in his ears. His brain told him to run, to alert the Quillitary, but his arms and legs wouldn't obey. He could only watch in horror as it moved closer to the shore, somewhere beyond the Quillitary yard, on the desolate side of the island. "What if they land?" he whispered. And then he remembered the walls, and he nearly laughed at himself, though he would never actually do that. He breathed easier, but still. What if they could break down the walls? Or worse, what if they landed on Artemis and Alex let them in? Aaron felt the blood drain from his face. His brother wasn't strong like Aaron was, but the last time Aaron saw Alex, Alex had changed. He would never forgive Aaron for killing the old mage, and maybe he would even seek revenge. It was something Aaron would have laughed off in the past, but now there was more of just a niggling of fear in his heart. Maybe he was paranoid, maybe not. All he knew was that Alex had more strength and intelligence in him than Aaron had ever expected. He stood on his tiptoes, straining to see his ship as it disappeared around the curve of the island. He looked back at the block opening he'd made, grateful the secret vessel of the night hadn't seen it. It was the weakest part of the island, he realized. He would have to put the blocks back immediately. But now he had to decide. Should he alert the Quillitary even though they weren't wholly in the Restorer's camp? Should he alert the Restorers even though his numbers were dwindling and their loyalty and competence was questionable? Either one would make him look weak if nothing happened, and he wasn't quite sure who would be the best to share the news of other lands with. Realizing his current state of instability made him nauseous. Clutching his stomach, he walked back to the palace, pondering everything. Meanwhile, in his office, Matilda the Gargoyle had climbed out of her box in the closet and crawled up to the wall to the window. She straightened her pink ribbon that wrapped around one of her horns, and when she saw the lighted ship pass by the opening Aaron had made, she lifted a hand to wave. And then she smiled, knowing immediately that Charlie had seen her and had waved, too. Land ho!
Captain Ahab, who was considerably more calm when the volcanic island was out of sight behind him than he was when it was belching flames were in plain view, shouted out their arrival to the shore of Artemis. The moon had left them, and it was dark as could be. Soon the captain called for the sails to be lowered. He dropped the anchor. Megan found Alex slumped over the railing. "Oh, dear," she said, rushing over to him. "Are you okay?" "Just a little pain," Alex whispered. Megan bent down, slipped his arm over her shoulder, and supported him. "Come on," she said. "Are you done throwing up?"
"I think so," he said. "Don't shake me."
"I'll try not to," Megan said. She helped him walk a step at a time, pausing in between as others, oblivious, sleepy, and eager to get their comfort of beds, flooded to the gangway. Simba circled around and dropped the rope into the ship and hovered near Alex.
"Let me take you," Simba said.
"I'm okay," Alex replied, tilting his head up. "You should take them in first." He lifted a heavy arm and pointed to Samhain and Lonnie, who sat together in a corner. Megan lifted a brow and glanced at Alex. He dropped his gaze. Simba sighed and circled around again, unable to simply fly in reverse.
"I'm here to escort you," Simba said to Lonnie. "I'm sure your father will be relieved to see you."
He dropped his back paws on the deck but kept his wings flapping to keep from capsizing the ship, and then he arched his back and opened his enormous mouth. Sammy placed Lonnie into Simba's jaws and climbed up on the great cat's back. Simba lifted off and Megan looked around, anxious to get off the ship. She spied Henry and Crow heading down the stairs and Sky hanging back. Megan smiled. "Hey," she said. Sky gave a nervous wave.
"Hi. I was just making sure he was okay. Do you need any help?"
Alex lifted his head at the sound of Sky's voice. He tried to smile.
"I might need an extra hand up the stairs in the mansion in a bit."
Megan rolled her eyes.
"Don't be silly, Alex. You're going to the sick ward."
"No way," he said.
"Well, if you're stubborn, you can take the tube directly."
"That's so clinical."
Megan laughed, and Alex forced himself not to.
"Ow," he breathed.
Sky hesitated and tapped her shoe against the staircase, her face flushing.
"Okay, well, Simba's back for me, so I'll be in my room if anybody needs me later," she said,
and then she disappeared down the stairs to the gangway, where Simba waited to shuttle her ashore. Megan turned to her ahead to Alex, who was gazing at the spot where Sky had been. He closed his eyes and breathed in as evenly as he could. A moment later, Simba was back from bringing Sky ashore.
"Is everybody else off the ship?" Alex asked.
He didn't bother opening his eyes.
"Florence is counting. You're the last two, plus the captain who is waiting for you to go first."
"Nice guy," Alex whispered. He swiveled with Megan's help and eased back into Simba's mouth, while Megan climbed onto Simba's back, and they were off to the mansion. Inside their beloved home, the fox and kitten hopped into the tube, heading for who knows where as Alex, Megan, and Simba walked in. It was quiet inside. The only movement came from the last straggling passengers, who headed straight to their rooms. Florence came in with the captain, who clomped past the others to the tubes, muttering, "Blast my skull!" as he disappeared, no doubt heading for the theater.
"To the sick bay with you, Alex," Florence said.
Alex glanced into the hospital ward, where Lonnie lay in a new bed next to her father's. Across from Claire Morning, Sam Mead stood by Lonnie's side, holding her hand. Alex's lips parted, and then he shook his head.
"No way! No one else needs to witness my spew."
He tried to smile, but he could feel the heat coming to his skin and the uneasiness in his gut returning.
"You look flushed," Megan said. "Do you have a fever?"
"Just tired, promise."
Alex turned to Simba to put a hand on the cat's neck.
"Thank you," he said.
He looked at Florence.
"Thank you,"
he said to her, and then he looked at Megan.
"And thank you. I am going to bed. Simba, if you need me, you know how to reach me."
He shuffled blindly through the tube as sweat dripped into his eyes.
"Good night, Alex," they said, each of them exchanging glances with the others, more than a little concerned.
He stepped into the tube, looking longingly at the steps he preferred to take, and with careful deliberation pressed the combination that would take him to his room. He leaned against the cool glass, the pain causing nausea, which prompted sweat to pour down his back. When he opened his eyes, he had reached his room. Finally, Alex could stop pretending to be brave, strong, leader of Artemis. His skin felt like it was on fire. He pushed himself upright, ripped off his drenched shirt, and staggered out of the tube as his room began to swirl around him. He dropped to his knees, clutching at the edge of the toffee table, hearing as pain tore through his body and head.
He gasped and groaned. His sweating hand slipped off the table and his arm slamming to the floor, jolting him. Every gasp for air felt like a knife to the back. He gave up trying to make it to the nearby couch, much less the bed, and melted to the floor as the world went black. Clive stared, eyes wide, lips purred in shock. "Alex?" he said. He waited, and then he pounded his face against the blackboard, straining and pushing as hard as he could. "Alex!" he yelled. "I'm sorry! Please don't die! Don't die!" But Alex didn't move. The Fourth Rescue. As Simber napped on his pedestal for the first time in days, he had a terrible dream about crashing into the sea and Alex calling out to him for help. "Simber!" The cat startled awake, immediately alert. He looked at Florence. She stood on her pedestal as usual, but her eyes were closed and she was asleep. Perhaps he was imagining things. He sampled the air and leaped down to see if there was anything amiss. "Simber!" he heard again, and he ran toward the voice, skidding over the marble floor to the dining room, where Oscar the Blackboard called out to him.
"What is it?" Simber asked.
"It's Alex! His Blackboard Clive says Alex is dead on the floor!" Simber froze, and then he turned on a dime and raced up the stairs, thundering up them in three strides and waking Florence in the process. She chased after him, having no idea what was happening. Simber skidded to a stop on the balcony.
"Can you see this hallway?" he asked, pointing to the boys' hall.
"No," she said.
"Get Sam Heed from the hospital ward and send him up here."
He turned and ran down the boys' hallway, stopping at Alex's room.
"Alex," Simber growled. He listened. "Clive, can you open this door?"
"No, I'm sorry," Clive called. Simber growled. He looked all around and then he backed up.
"Look out," he called.
He took a running start and slammed into the door, his shoulders and wings crashing through the walls on either side, wood framing the door and chunks of the wall splintered across the room.
"Help!" Clive yelled. "Intruder!"
"I am the help, you dolt," Simber said.
He found Alex sprawled on his side and nudged him, then pushed him over onto his back as pounding footsteps approached from the hallway, and then came to an abrupt stop.
"Holy cats," whispered Sam Heed, looking at the mess destruction. "It looks like a hurricane hit."
He rushed over to Simber. "What happened? Is he okay?" He could hear doors opening up and down the hallway as sleepy students peered out to see what had caused the crash.
"He's alive. I need you to tell everybody to get back inside their rooms. Clive, tell their blackboards to call them in too. Say it's for safety. Make something up."
Clive nodded and disappeared. "Are you bringing him downstairs? We'll need another bed."
"No," Simber said decisively. "The head mage doesn't ask for anything. But he certainly doesn't need to be on display. I say he gets private room when he's sick,"
he growled to prove his point.
"I totally agree," Sam Heed said, a little nervous.
"Help Clive clear the hall, and then you and Florence go spruce up Marcus's apartment. It's time Alex lives where he belongs."
Sam Heed paled. The news of Mr. Today's death was still so fresh. Simber noticed his hesitation.
Scratch that. Ask Florence to do that. Then you monitor the halls. The boy needs some dignity and privacy. Nobody needs to see him like this."
Sam Heed nodded, and in a flash, he was gone. Simber sat on his haunches and used a front paw to cradle Alex's head and shoulders as he scooped the boy into his mouth. He waited a few minutes until Sam Heed returned at full sprint.
"All clear," he said, huffing.
Simber nodded, unable to speak, and with the utmost gentleness, he carried Alex to the head mage's living quarters. Sam Heed followed him to the mostly secret hallway and stood outside the door waiting to see if he was needed. Florence, who had to stoop a little bit to get inside the apartment, looked up from the soothing of the comforter.
"Fresh linens, good as new."
She leaned towards Simber, picking up Alex from his mouth, and laid him down on the bed.
"Karina's back," she said. "Isn't she a nurse?"
"She can access the hallway. You track her down. I'll get Octavia."
Sam Heed cleared his throat. Florence looked up.
Oh, sorry. You can go back to bed, you poor thing. Thanks for helping. Well, actually, what I was going to say was that with all of this Alex's yakking and stuff... Simmer cringed. He heard enough of horrible terminology for one day. I mean, all the vomiting and the sweating. He's probably dehydrated. He hasn't drunk anything since I've been with him. I'd start there. Florence nodded. I never thought of that. Simmer shrugged.
Me neither.
Sammy shook his head. Statues, he muttered. I'll get some water. Florence nodded. I'll get Karina and Octavia. Simber stayed by Alex's side, vowing not to leave until the young mage woke up.